Where did you get this video?
From CNN. But it's not just at Yale. And I'm sorry we had to call out Yale. It's on every campus. Universities, it's not in their interest to disclose cases of rape. And I think it's so important for university presidents and healthcare workers at schools to think twice about listening to students who dare to report a sexual assault or rape on campus.
Let's turn to a clip of some of the survivors who Lenore meets with. And I met them up at Barnard College, as they are still so emotional, so wrecked, and also strong, you know, all at the same time. Some of the survivors Lenore meets here in the United States, where they talk about the failures of the criminal justice system to address the issue of rape. This is Morgan.
To the DA. Well, the first time I met with her and I went in, she sat down and she said that she thought that he was cute. And she tried to convince me that I had just had a weak moment and that it was my fault.
Another survivor Lenore spoke with is Deborah.
He got 1 year in jail.
Oh my God.
And I never understood that because he had done it to me for nine years and did it to two of my friends, did it to his own daughter. It's so unfair that he's out there probably still doing it.
Cecilia Peck, tell us about Deborah and before that, Morgan.
Deborah was raped by her stepfather, by her mother's husband from the age of 4 to 14 years old. And like so many kids who are victims of domestic abuse, who are frightened to say anything or intimidated or made to feel complicit in it, she kept quiet for all those years. And when she finally was able to report it to someone at the hospital, her mother disowned her. She gave her up as a ward of the state because she was in denial and wanted to save her marriage over her daughter. And Deborah has never spoken about it before, but we met her through a friend, and she is one of our incredibly brave survivors who finds her voice in this film.
And before that, Morgan saying the prosecutor said to her, "But he's so cute, her rapist."
Right. Maybe you just had a weak moment. You know, again, for victims of domestic rape or rape with the use of drugs, when you know the rapist, it's so hard to get the law enforcement or justice system to believe you because the rapist will always say, "But she knew me. She wanted it." And that's what happened to Morgan. She knew the guy, but she was raped. But the DA said, "You have no case."
I mean, this is really the coming together of two remarkable women, Lenore, and you yourself. You are a documentary filmmaker, Shut Up and Sing, with Barbara Koppel, the Oscar-winning filmmaker, about the Dixie Chicks. And you have done another film, also with Barbara Koppel, about your own legendary father, Gregory Peck.
Well, he also was a quiet crusader. You know, he was such a legendary movie star, but he managed to make films about important issues that were controversial, like anti-Semitism and Gentlemen's Agreement, and he dealt with racism in To Kill a Mockingbird. So, you know, I'm really grateful for that legacy that I come from, and trying in my own way, I could never live up, but to do stories that count.
That was Cecilia Peck, director of Brave Miss World, and Inba Lesner, the film's producer and editor. The film chronicles the story of Lenore Abigail, who won Miss World 1998, just 2 months after she was raped. Lenore went on to become a global advocate for victims of sexual violence. For more information on the film, you can visit LenoreSpeaksOut.com. You can also go to our website to watch Cecilia Peck, the director, talk about her own legendary father, Gregory Peck, the actor. The film has yet to get a distributor. We interviewed them just after a sneak preview at the film at the Athena Film Festival at Barnard College last week. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Fels, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Ravi Karan, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Martina Starosta, Nemo Allen. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Maté for another edition of Democracy Now!
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook, 2 minutes after 6 o'clock, time for Off the Wall. to Very Given, Very Bright. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Yet another abbreviated program, but I believe this is the last time, I think. I looked at the schedule. I don't think there's any more games, but we'll see. So we're only on for 45 minutes tonight. I apologize for that. We will try and take phone calls. We're going to try and do that. We actually are. We really will. I know it's been a long, long time, but we definitely want to get to that. Kyle's here as well. Are you going to say anything? Just sit on the floor and look at me. Hi.
Hi.
It's raining outside. It's one of those crazy days where you don't know what's going to happen next. What do you think of the meteorite, huh? That's something.
It was pretty spectacular. Had a lot more of an impact than you think.
Is that supposed to be a pun? An impact? Well, yeah, it landed in a frozen lake. And it's a good thing it landed in a frozen lake as opposed to, you know, a frozen mall or something, or, you know, some kind of place where people might be. Nobody was killed, but boy, have you seen the videos of this thing? Explosions and windows breaking and things like that. And they say it's the biggest object from the rest of the universe in over 100 years to come to our planet.
Yeah, there's shockwaves, several shockwaves, and huge amounts of glass broken because of it.
Yeah, and they say that, they say it exploded in the air. Does that mean it exploded, or it was a supersonic sound blast? What do you think it is? I don't really know these
things. I'd really love to find a good read of what actually happened to it, because you can say, yeah, it's an explosion, yeah, but that may be just a description of the sound, but actually what caused it? Was it hitting the atmosphere? Because the other thing is, when you look at some of the videos, like the dash cam, it like comes in really low. You got to understand, that's really still quite far away.
Yes.
And it's, you know, because it's at the horizon, and it's hard to judge. And then when it actually comes in, like, what causes those shockwaves? Is it the atmosphere, or is some other meteorological property much lower, or because it was not on the ground, it wasn't anything physical that it hit. So, and it's going at 30,000 miles per second or something.
Well, no, I don't know if it's going that
hour.
Fast.
This is really fast.
That'd be
miles per hour. Yeah,
yeah, but
kilometers per hour.
People didn't know what it was. They just saw this this giant object, and I guess it was really kind of baffling. Really, no one on the planet has ever seen anything like this before. We can honestly say that. And it has not happened in over 100 years. The last time it happened in Russia again, too, 1900-something. But, of course, there were no cameras going then, no video recorders that captured it. This time, we were a bit more alert, and we were able to capture numerous times the effects, and it was as surprising to me watching the video, seeing the shockwave hit and all the glass break. I guess, you know, you wouldn't expect that. You just see this giant object in the sky, you don't know what it is, you don't expect the shockwave to come as well. But according to the New York Times, it sheared the roof off of a brick and steel factory building, and then it left a nearby glass facade unscathed. Glasses in high rises and factories and all kinds of other places were blown out, and about 1,000 people injured. Now, they say more ominously, reports came into local news media over the weekend of strange phenomena. Behind unshattered apartment windows, glass jugs were said to explode into shards. Imagine that. The window didn't explode of the building, but glass jugs exploded. Dishes cracked, electronics died, balconies rattled. One man said a bottle broke right in his hand. Yeah, so it was something else. We don't get all the good things. Russians always get the good things. We never get meteorites coming here. I can only imagine what it would be like if we did, and how we'd handle it, and how the mass media would handle it. But right now, over there, people are collecting black rocks. They're finding fragments of the meteor, and they're trying to sell it on eBay and various other places, while the authorities are trying to grab it as quickly as possible and prevent them from doing that, because who knows what kinds of secrets are hidden in there. Maybe it was extraterrestrial life visiting us. We'll never know.
It might be radioactive, too, and dangerous, but
could be.
Yeah.
Could be. And something else that doesn't happen every day. In fact, I don't think this has happened for 600 years. I've already started on a roll here. You want to interrupt me now? Go ahead.
Well, it is
ruined my whole effect, but go ahead.
Isn't it a UFO?
It's not a UFO if they identify it.
All right, fine. But they didn't see it coming. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so it only happens once every 600 years, and maybe in the year 2600 now I'll be able to say this again. Thank you, Kyle.
Sorry. Go on, I'm listening, I swear.
It's been deflated. There's no way I can say this without sounding like a fool. Every 600 years, apparently, a pope resigns, and that happens. That's what I was leading up to. Pope Benedict resigned last week. We actually missed it a week ago because we only had a 45-minute show, and we had to race through it. But what do you think about that, Kyle? Every 100 years, we get a meteor. Every 600 years, a pope resigns.
Sure.
Sure, really? That's all you got to say about this?
Yep.
Okay, wonderful. This is going to be a long 45 minutes. So Pope Benedict the 16th announced a week ago Monday that he would resign on February 28th, that's the end of this month, because he was simply too busy to be a pope anymore. Oh, no, I misread that. I'm sorry. Too infirm to carry on. All right, easy mistake to make.
No, it's because he opened a Twitter account and he became too busy.
Well, it does take a lot of time.
Yeah.
And you have to respect that. So the decision sets the stage for a conclave to elect a new pope before the end of March. So that means we're going to be popeless for the month of March. Well, we'll have a spare pope lying around or sitting around, whatever he does. And then we'll have two popes, which, again, is kind of weird. An ex-pope and an existing pope.
That's not weird. In fact, that's really common. There's a lot of types of families that have two dads and like
two
leaders.
Popes,
two male leaders. Yeah. Well, no,
I wasn't saying that was rare in and of itself. The pope of the Catholic Church. You know, that's kind of rare to have two of them.
No,
at
it's
the same
2013.
Time.
There's all kinds of types of families.
Well,
the
okay.
Church is no exception.
Well, apparently not. So he will be the ex-pope in just a few days, actually. And what do you think? What do you think the new pope's going to come from? Did we mention this last week? I thought we wanted to talk about this last week, but we didn't talk about it in depth if we did. I was saying how I think Brazil's going to get it because they're getting everything lately. They're getting the World Cup. They're getting the Olympics. So why not get the pope as well? I know I was going off on a rampage somewhere about that.
And Catholicism is very big down there.
It's
very
popular.
They've got the largest Jesus Christ.
Yes, they do. And that counts for something. In the Vatican, they definitely give you a check mark for having the biggest Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also Africa. Imagine an African pope, a black pope. That's never happened either.
That would be really cool.
Wouldn't that be cool?
It'd be different. It would be very different.
Uh-huh. Or an American pope. That's even possible, too. They're saying the Cardinal of New York City could possibly be the pope. That's just too damn much responsibility for New York, I think.
Do they campaign?
I'm not sure when the campaign begins, but it gets pretty brutal at times.
Is it like a political?
It's awful. It puts political campaigns in this country to shame because they dig up all kinds of dirt. And there's all sorts of TV ads, and then the debates, of course, that just goes on for a long time.
And then the pundits and the
Wolf Blitzer is on 24 hours a day. It seems talking about this pope versus that pope, and it's not looking forward to this at all. But at least it's not likely that the next pope will be a Nazi like this one was. Oh, yeah, I went there. I said it. I said it before, so I might as well say it again. He was a Nazi. I mean, yeah, he said it wasn't a good idea. He didn't like being a Nazi, or he was like the one kid out of all the others that went against it. But he did serve as a child.
Yeah.
But every child served back then, so yeah, I know, it's a little bit unfair.
It's not like there were a whole bunch of other youth clubs to kind of hang out.
No. No, there wasn't much to do back then except
doesn't make him any less of a
people.
Nazi, though.
It doesn't make him a Nazi now.
No,
but
no.
He was
no.
a Nazi then.
Or any less of one then, yeah, I guess that's what I meant.
New magazine? You want to tell us about this?
Oh, man, I am so excited about this. Whew.
We have nothing to do with that. About that. It's not our magazine. But
no,
it's another
no,
magazine.
No, this isn't our magazine, but it seems that Long Island Fugitive Finder...
Oh, that's a classic magazine.
Yeah, it seems it has become so popular. Got the latest edition right here, Volume 7, Issue 2. And there's a lot of really interesting criminals and fugitives in here.
They really are. And when you get to know them, too,
yes.
There's so much they have to say and to contribute.
Yep.
And, you know, to
like Most Wanted number 447. Uh-huh. And most wanted number...
Oh, well, that's not really fair. He's not the 447th most wanted. If he's listening, I don't want him to feel bad about that, because it's just a... I don't know if it's an alphabetical list or just a randomly generated list by the magazine. And if you're on the front cover, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're the most wanted. It just means you're the most photogenic. So,
right.
You know, there's a lot of competition, a lot of bad feelings amongst fugitives. And I just want to make sure that people realize, we're all in this together.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So it's a way of identifying them as you go through the magazine, and you can just write down all the ones that you hang out with or that you see. And anyway, I have the great honor to announce a different kind of magazine, but it's also one and the same. It's Long Island Pet Finder. Yes, Long Island Pet Finder.
It looks exactly the same. In fact, even the covers look the same. They look like the same person, sort of.
Yeah, and I have right here Volume 1, Issue 2.
Uh-huh.
February 2013.
Which means it began last month.
And featured on this month's cover is Lucky from North Shirley, New York. I can read a little bit about Lucky.
Well, Lucky's not so lucky if Lucky's missing. Well, maybe Lucky is lucky if the place that they're missing from isn't a good place.
Lucky came to us when she was just over 2 months old, and now looking back at the 12 years we've had with her, I can honestly say that I don't know how we lived without her goofy, fuzzy self before that.
How are they living now, then?
From singing happy birthday with us at each and every one of our birthday parties, that's howling in parentheses, but as much as a dog could sing, I guess, to shoving her way through our legs when she wanted a good back scratch, to her very slobbery kisses when we walk through the front door. Lucky will forever be our baby girl, and we consider ourselves beyond grateful for having been able to be a part of her life. And she's the winner. Congratulations to Lucky. Why is she a winner?
She's the winner of the most lost dog.
One winner of the Pet of the Month contest will be selected each month based on the number of votes. Winning pet by number of votes will be featured in the next scheduled print edition of the magazine. By entering the contest, registrants agree to allow their pet photos to be featured in the print and online versions. How is she a winner? So maybe she's
not
lost.
You have to be lost.
But there's other ones in here that
no,
are lost.
No, she's on the front cover. She's lost. That's a lost dog there. That's a lost dog. And also a winner, but a lost dog that's a winner. And I don't know if you have to be lost to be a winner.
I'm trying to find that rule.
Well, I mean, it's the cover of the thing that says Most Wanted Pets. I'm sorry, not most... What's the name of the magazine again?
Long Island Pet Finder.
Pet Finder. Okay, I'm looking at the Fugitive Finder. And in the interest of equal time, since you're reading information about the front cover of that magazine, I'd like to read the information about the front cover of this magazine. Suffolk's Most Wanted is Christian Larares. He's wanted for assault second degree. Being sought by Suffolk County Police on one outstanding warrant for assault, second degree, July 29, 2012. He, along with another subject, stabbed a man during a fight on Oak Street in Copaig, and an arrest warrant was issued for him on December 6, 2012. Last seen in the company of a dog named Lucky. Now, there will be crossovers between these two magazines. I'm certain of that.
I stand corrected. Lucky simply won... the cover here.
You're saying Lucky's not missing
Lucky
at all?
Lucky may not be lost. Now, that's different from Fugitive Finder, because definitely the person on the cover of Fugitive Finder is not a winner. He's on there because he's a fugitive.
That's kind of cruel, Carl.
But I don't see anywhere in here, Carl, where Lucky is missing.
Why would you... I mean, to say he's not a winner, I mean, come on.
Why would you even enter your dog in Pet Finder?
He had a bad hair day, that's for sure, but I see potential here. I see potential. Okay, Pet Finder, that tells me the dog's lost. We should have done our research. Well, the research team here should have done their research, but let's not get into that on the air. Let's just agree to disagree with everything and come back to this. Are any of the pets that you'd like to focus on?
We did
notice there was only one cat in the whole thing.
Zookie and Zoe and...
I had a question about that one. Those are two dogs together. Did they both get lost at the same time? They run away together? How is that
Dexter
even possible?
Dexter and Zoe, yeah.
Yeah, they're
Husky
pictured
and
together.
Shepherd. Yes.
So how did two dogs get lost at the same time from the same house?
I'm not sure.
There's a lot going on here. I'm sorry. We have to move quicker because we are running out of time. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go into delay so that we can immediately take phone calls, because I know we've been remiss in this. Over the past few weeks, so let me meet you guys in delay after I throw the appropriate switches, and then we will take phone calls. Once we get to delay, that's when we will announce the telephone number.
This is Noah Berger of Skinny Puppy, and you're listening to Long Island's first station of the 90s, 90.1 FM, WVSB, Stony Brook.
And here we are. We made it to delay, at least I think we did. And I might as well tell people at this point that the phone number for us is 631-632-6901. 631-632-6901. If you're anywhere in the world you'd like to talk to us, you'd like to be on the air, you'd like to reach Suffolk County, New York, and the internet, then by all means, call 631-632-6901. Did you make it to delay, Kyle?
Yes, I'm here, and you know what? I'm gonna report back on Pet Finder. There's actually some more research we have to do exactly what it is for. But there are lots of pets listed and a lot of really interesting write-ups on how the pets are amazing pets. But no information about whether it's actually a lost pet or not. And it's Pet Finder, so this is really confusing.
Anyway, that magazine.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I just want to try and see if they have maybe a statement of purpose or something like that. I see Pet Finder contest rules. I see the fact that Newfoundlands have webbed feet. And that apparently is what makes them good swimmers. That's a fact that you can learn by picking up this magazine. And I see one cat, but I don't see...
Again.
Oh, and you know what? Oh, my God. Kyle, this is bigger than we thought. There are more magazines. There's Long Island Job Finder. There's Long Island Apartment Finder. There's Long Island Pet Finder, which is this, and Long Island Fugitive Finder.
Okay, so clear this up then.
Four magazines.
But there's people that have pets. Obviously, they're happy. So why would they sell them if the pets are not indeed lost? And then if they are indeed lost, where exactly in there does it give you, like, if I find this particular pet, who do I call? It just says call for advertisement. So I'm very, very confused. We're going to do some more research. We'll come back with a report.
Yeah, we're sorry for the confusion here. But that's what happens when you have a lot of magazines. You get very confused. But yeah, there's four things you could find: a job, an apartment, a pet, or a fugitive. Your choice, I guess. Four great publications and websites covering one great island where all kinds of things need to be found. Wow. Well, I learned something today.
Yes.
Sure did. Okay, we have a phone call, so let's go over to the phone and see who is joining us. Good evening. You are on Off the Wall.
Emmanuel.
Hi, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from PA.
PA, Pennsylvania. Awesome, awesome. Well, that's a big state. Are you calling from the eastern part where Philadelphia is or the western part where Pittsburgh is?
Harrisburg.
That's the middle, isn't it? Okay, well, what's on your mind?
I was calling to ask about how the move is going for Off the Hook.
Oh, you're calling to ask about the other radio station. Well, you know what? It's interesting. Tomorrow will be our first show from the other location, which is in Harlem. We're moving from Wall Street to Harlem. And that move took place, I believe it took place yesterday, sort of. And on our way to this radio show, we were listening to WBAI, and they weren't on the air. So I don't know what's going on. All I know is it's going to be epic, historic. We don't know what's happening, and tomorrow's show should be worth listening to.
Well, you know, I definitely will listen.
Okay, cool. Anything else on your mind?
Not really.
Okay.
I have some questions for, like, the other people from the other show, so I guess I'll save those for tomorrow.
Okay, yeah, assuming we're on the air. Actually, you know what? We're not taking phone calls because it's a fundraiser, so you might as well ask the question now.
If you could ask Bern, yes. He has, like, a bee farm, right?
He is involved with bees somehow, and he's kind of cagey about it, no pun intended, but he has bees, I think, or he works with bees, or bees work with him, or something like that. But what would you like me to ask him about the bees?
I was wondering if he does have a bee farm, if he, like, sells the honey.
If he sells the honey, or keeps it all for himself. I could ask him, and report the answer back somehow.
Awesome.
You can also write to the radio show, OTH at 2600.com, just like you can write to this one, OTW at 2600.com.
All right.
Okay?
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling, and greetings to all of Harrisburg.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
All right. Take care. Again, 631-632-6901 is our telephone number. Did I show you this, Kyle? I got my one of my bills. I did this whole health kick a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, the usual physical, blood work, all that kind of thing. And, you know, I have what I call theoretical insurance where it sort of works. It sucks. It's terrible. I have something like a $3,000 deductible, mm-hmm. which supposedly allows you to get low cost insurance, except the insurance isn't low cost anymore. It's equivalent to other insurance. I got to look for something better. What it basically means is that they don't cover anything until you reach $3,000. So,
hey, my deductible is like $7,000.
Well, yeah, but somehow they cover things for you. And also, what you pay out there in Washington is something like a fifth what I pay here, which True. Is insane. But anyway, so I just got the thing from the laboratory, and they're telling me how much it actually costs to do the blood work. And a total charge was $393.19, of which the insurance paid about $20. Yeah, they paid about $20 out of $393.19. But get this, and this is the magic about the American insurance
system.
That's
before they launder it.
Yeah, they launder it. They launder they do something. There is in quotes, they should put it in quotes, an insurance right. discount of $332.06, meaning that I only have to pay $40. But the thing is, it costs $393 to start with, and then the insurance pays $20, and then because there was insurance involved at some point, all of a sudden the price goes way down and they lob another $332 off of it. Now, if I didn't have insurance, I'd have to pay the full $393.19. It doesn't make any sense because the people who can least afford it are the ones paying the most. And just because I have insurance that doesn't cover it means that I pay less. It's not covered by insurance. It's covered by fraud, I guess, or something. Just corruption.
It's like Walmart having like the right to set their own terms on products. It's like a big box discount. They deal big with the medical companies, and then they get to set their terms. They get their big discounts because they have all kinds of people wrapped into their system, and you're just the end user, and you don't have any clout like they do.
Yeah, I guess that's it. But that's a real eye-opener to how the insurance works here. If anybody can explain it better, please let us know.
It's curious.
Did you see we had a full bank of phone calls? We have one left here. 631-632-6901. Yeah, call back if you got disconnected. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, how are you tonight?
Hey, pretty good. Where are you calling from?
Good. I'm in Quorum right now.
Quorum, New York, right here on Long Island.
Yeah, I've been listening for many, many years, too many years to mention, and I still can't figure out what's the best cell phone service to get that's not going to rip me off. And what do you think about this big Second Amendment debate? Like, I don't see why every citizen shouldn't be allowed to keep a musket.
Okay. Well, we have not actually been devoting very much time to the whole gun debate. No, that's not true at all.
But wasn't arms a musket back then? I mean,
yes, it was a bayonet, musket, yeah, all that kind of thing.
Anything flintlock, yeah.
And it's hard to get a hold of those things.
I'm practically a communist, but I'm perfectly in favor of everyone owning a musket if they feel the need.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I only imagine the founding fathers with assault weapons, how things might have turned out back then. Let's get to your first question about cell phones. I don't know. You know, it's part of their charter that they have to try and rip you off. That's like just the agreement. So it really depends on something like reception. What do you get the best reception where you are, etc., and you know how much of the phone
use. I
just
use it as a phone. I can't even see the buttons, and so I just use it as a phone, and it still seems like a total ripoff. And I remember you guys teaching me a lot of stuff when it used to be, you know, regular Ma Bell landlines. And
well, do you still have a landline?
Yes.
Okay, and that should be worthwhile to keep, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm ready to give up the cell phone and just, you know, look at my answering machine in the evening.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. There's a lot of different options. One thing you might do is just buy an unlocked phone or something just really simple that you could use on any different network, and then just buy the SIMs, and you could try all the different networks to see what the reception's like. And if you went back and forth for a long time, you could use like call forwarding services so that you can keep one number and then just change the number and have it forwarded to whatever different SIM card you're using or different thing. And that's a little bit more like pay as you go. You're not really tied into any contracts, but the hardware is yours. And because it would be unlocked, you could use it across GSM networks and stuff like that. That's a couple ideas I'd have just, in brief, but there's a lot of different things you could do.
All right, because I see my kids use, like, some application Uvu, and that doesn't even cost them any money.
Yeah, well, apps are a whole different ball game there. People just get very drawn into their phones constantly, wherever they happen to be. And, you know, I just don't have that many opportunities to devote time to that. So I ask myself, what do I actually need? Turns out I don't need very much. I need to be able to answer a phone call if I'm on the road. And I don't need to be able to do other things. So I keep it very simple, and I have landlines in other places. So people understand what I'm saying, which is good.
All right. Well, I'll try what the other guy said. I'll try a few different services, see which is the cheapest and the one that works the best in this area. And if I ever trade in my air guns for muskets, I'll give you a call and let you know how that goes.
All right. Good luck with that. Thanks. Thanks for the call.
Good night. Great show. Thank you.
Thank you. And greetings to all of Corum. And let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Speak up, please. Turn down your radio. Come back to the phone. Anyone there? All right, you know, we can't stay around forever, that's for sure. Hey, Kyle, I got a surprise for you. You know, there was a rampage today, another gunman in Southern California. It's hardly in the news at all. It's such
really?
So boring. It's not. Yeah, we look at the news, and we don't even see these things. But, yeah, residents of several Orange County communities awoke to streets littered with yellow crime scene tape on Tuesday after a gunman killed three people and injured at least three more before killing himself at the end of a shooting and carjacking rampage, according to law enforcement officials. They say this is an isolated event, we believe, by someone who went on a rampage. There is no more threat to the community, except for all the other people that are going to go on rampages, too, because they have a bad day and they have access to all these weapons and things like that. It's just, yeah, isolated event. But they, you know, how many isolated events are there going to be?
Yeah, we all don't get what we want out of life every now and then, and it's really about how you deal with it.
Yeah, when I was a kid and I went on a rampage, basically, I was knocking books off a shelf or something.
Yeah.
That's because that's all I had access to. So,
yeah, and guess what? You lived through it, and you're not in jail, and you're not, you know, dead from self-inflicted wounds because you made some bad choices and couldn't get out of a SWAT team surrounding you.
It was a bad choice to knock down the books. I agree with that now, but I didn't see that then, you know? So
I like a good scream.
Yeah, a good scream is good. Don't do it here. You'll blow out the equipment.
No.
But yeah, it's everyone has to find a way to unleash
venting.
Venting,
right?
Venting is important.
That used to be a word. You could vent.
But then again, you got some stupidity on all sides. A 7-year-old Mary Blair Elementary School student says he's confused about getting in trouble for trying to save the world from evil, though Thompson School District officials contend that the boy broke one of the school's absolute rules. This kid, he's in second grade. His name is Alex. He was suspended for throwing an imaginary grenade during recess on the playground. Now, Alex did not have anything in his hand at the time. He made no threats towards other people. Basically, what happened was he said he was going to save the earth by throwing the pretend grenade at an imaginary box that had something evil inside. And when he threw the grenade, he pretended that the box exploded, an apparent success. Now, his parents say he's very confused. They're confused as well. It makes it hard to enforce rules like this. Actually, you know, I think this is the this is one of the parents saying this. Now, district policy does not prohibit imaginary weapons, but Superintendent Stan Shear said individual schools are permitted to add enhancements to the general student code of conduct. It fell under that set of local policy they have in that building, and it was shared with all parents in the community at the beginning of the year. Yeah, but how do you explain this to a kid that they can't have imaginary toys? As a whole student side, we just don't talk about. They say it's a bit one-sided with the parents' point of view. Now, the parent says her son had been in trouble one other time at school. Get this, for accessing other students' reading accounts on the computer. Sounds like a bright kid there.
Mm.
But she was not informed of him making threats or acting violent. And I don't see anything here to say that he was doing that in this case either. Now, according to the Absolutes procedure of this school, a student is allowed two non-severe, non-suspension occurrences, and a third occurrence leads to a formal suspension. Every absolute that is broken following the first suspension automatically results in a suspension. This whole thing is stupid. I mean, it really is. A kid's throwing an imaginary grenade at an imaginary box, imaginary explosion, and this is something that's bad. You know, I'm sorry. You know how I feel about weapons, about actual threats, but imagination is not something that I think is ever really a threat.
You know, there's this story back in elementary school. There was this upperclassman girl, and she, I guess, was, you know, showing me different things she was doing. She dug a hole, and she had, like, some little bottle of fluid and some wires and a battery, and she was planning to do, you know, it was just, like, you know, make-believe kind of thing, and it was, like, some kind of bomb or something. And this was, you know, during recess, and I just look at that, and I'm like, wow. I had no idea really what was going on, and it was totally... we looked at it as totally crazy now, and we would have probably been, you know, through all kinds of stuff just because of, you know, the implications had another student seen or opened their mouth at the time.
Do you still have her name? Because there is no statute of limitations.
No, I have no idea, like, who she was or whatever, but I have this memory of her, like, you know, like, teach, you know, just like befriending me and sort of like I was younger and she was an upperclassman and she had some sort of agenda or game involving, you know, this secret weapon she was making that really had absolutely no technical, like, ability to do anything other than a bunch of sort of ominous looking parts. And I was probably, in hindsight, interested because I like learning how things work. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out that it didn't work. Or I couldn't figure out that it worked at all, or what exactly she was doing, and that was probably why I was interested. I probably wanted to help, you know, engineer something that, you know, actually did work. But thank God I'm grown and I don't get approached by the same crazy people, I guess. But you know how massively in trouble we would have gotten for that kind of thing. Even I see kids like. Make, you know, they do make believe, or they play, you know, cops and robbers, or they shoot guns all the time. You know, kids love making the machine gun sound, and you know,
well, the fact that when I was growing up, kids were doing that all the time,
right.
And there wasn't as much gun violence in the streets. So it's not you know, one leads to the other necessarily. It can, but it's not a given that if a kid is playing cops and robbers that he's going to actually want to shoot people in real life. That really depends on how you bring kids up and other things that you expose them to. So, you know, I think we really need to let kids be kids, stop second-guessing and judging and making all these nonsensical rules, keep an eye on what's going on, and learn from them as well because they have so much to teach us. You know, they don't have all this messed up set of values that we've accumulated over our decades.
And stop just letting them play Xbox and Halo and stuff.
Yeah, get outside and seriously. Do things like that. You know, we have a couple of letters. Dear Emmanuel, I just got around to listening to the January 29th show. I was excited that my last short and concise letter was read on the air. So you must be really thrilled now. A second letter is being read on the air. I did not hate the background music. I'm actually familiar with Sleep and enjoy their song Dragon Knot. You should listen to it sometimes. It's one of their better tracks. Of course, we played Dope Smoker, mm-hmm. Which lasts for 65 minutes. Our show only lasted for 45 minutes that week, too. It covered it pretty well, as it covered the entire night at the bar the week before that. Also, you should be able to make out the lyrics. While I like Sleep, I don't think I would listen to 60 minutes of them straight. Did the sports guys that came in after you play the last 15 minutes of the track? Signed, Dustin. Dustin, they did not. No, they went straight to sports. They did not play the, what's the genre called again, Kyle?
Stoner Doom.
Stoner Doom. Yeah, they did not play the Stoner Doom track.
I'm shocked.
I'm sorry to say. You know, I'm going to pop out of delay now. Stand by. Stand by, Kyle. We're going to...
I'm holding on. Brace.
Make this as smooth as possible.
Brace.
Oh, you okay?
Yes.
People have no idea what happened.
You got to hang on, man. This, that hurts sometimes.
It does. It does. So we're not taking any more phone calls. We will next week when we're on for a full hour, I believe, unless there's another sports game coming up. But we are... What's going on tonight? We've got... today's what, the 19th?
Yes.
UMBC.
University Michigan?
I don't know what that stands for.
Basketball
well,
club?
Well, the U probably stands for university, and the C probably stands for college.
Massachusetts.
Wait, why would they have both in the same? No, it couldn't be university and college. That wouldn't make any sense. Okay, well, you know what? If you tune in 5 minutes, you'll find out, because I'm sure they'll tell us.
Something.
But here's another letter. In case you didn't see this, actually, no, it's not that letter, because we don't have time to see that. I'm sorry. That whoever wrote that letter, we'll get to that another time. Hi, Emmanuel. I hope you're well. This is Mark over here in the UK, from a northern coastal town near Lancaster in Lancashire on our west coast. I'm a Linux geek, ham, a musician, a general science, and electronics geek. I'm writing to say thank you for making me laugh. I've recently lost my mother, and to keep my mind from dwelling on it, I found watching Hours of Hope really helped me through it, helped cheer me up. I listened to Off the Wall when you were describing the Stoner Doom stuff. That really seems to have gone over well.
Yeah.
It really made me laugh out loud, so thank you for listening to my spirits manual. I've been following 2600 for several years, also Off the Hook, Off the Wall, much of the 2600 culture and characters, and was particularly thrilled as I was listening to your recent English surveillance trip.
Oh, cool.
On my MP3 player, that when Carl and I were tooting around the countryside, traveling through a place called Skipton-on-the-Train, from my mother's house, just as you were describing, you both were coming through the same small town of Skipton. What do you think about that, Kyle?
That's amazing.
That is so awesome.
I love that.
I hope to even travel to one of the Hope conferences one day, if funds ever allow, maybe even share a cup of tea with you all. Best wishes. Thanks to yourself, Kyle, Bernie S., Kevin Mitnick. Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much for that letter, and best wishes to you and everyone over there. We had a fantastic time in that part of the world, and we look forward to going back again. Maybe take some pictures of more surveillance things. Who knows? Get into some mischief.
That's the best stuff, going out there, exposing yourself, maybe meeting a couple people and then sharing it and then hearing back from people that are either from there, maybe they weren't part of the trip, but they can identify and relate and enjoy what we shared about our experience there.
Absolutely. Hey, we're out of time. It really went by fast, didn't it? But we'll be back next week, same time for a full hour. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Good night, Kyle.
Good night, E.
Oh, and stay tuned for basketball with the mystery UMBC entity.
You know you want.
Hello, this is Steve Peichel, head coach of the Stony Brook men's basketball team, and you're listening to the longtime home of Seawolf Sports, WUSB.
All right, 43 degrees at 6:46 p.m. here on the North Shore of Long Island. You're listening to 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook. Tonight, a very special presentation of Stony Brook Sports, the Seawolves men's basketball team taking on the UMBC Retrievers. Let's go live now to Pritchard Gym here on the campus of Stony Brook University. Live coverage, Mike Solano, Kurt Hilton, and Jeff Bernstein.
It's our pleasure to have you with us here for as we get down, counting down the days now to the regular season here in the America East. Stony Brook getting set to take on the UMBC Retrievers. Stony Brook comes in with a record of 19-6, 10-2 in the America East. The UMBC 6-19, 4-8 in the America East. UMBC gets here. Their last game was at New Hampshire. And they took an overtime loss to New Hampshire, the Wildcats, 92-86. Tough one. They were in the hunt for that. The Seawolves, of course, they're still glowing, and their fans are, really, from their win, convincing win over Vermont. It really has given them a game and a half, two games up in the win column against Vermont, 65-48 in what really, despite Vermont being a little bit banged up, Jeff, was really just stunning to some people. The 48 points, the biggest part of that, holding a quality offensive team to 48. And the defense that night was outstanding.
Yeah, quality game for Stony Brook. And I think it also, you know, really helped the Seawolves mentally because they lost to Stony Brook. Stony Brook lost to Vermont here at the arena in the championship. Then they lost to him at Pritchard Gym. They lost to him at Patrick Gym during the regular season. So two straight losses against them. And so they got a win against Vermont, which really helped them. And, you know, coaches don't like to look at it, but we like to look. We could look at it. Comes down to four games, two up in the loss column. You know, and that's how you got to look at them. But still a lot of good games to go. You got to play here. You got to go to Maine. Okay, you have to go to BU in their last game in America East and Albany here. So four big games for Stony Brook to take care of business before claiming themselves the number one seed, if they can do that. And it starts right here. UMBC, a deadly three-point shooting team. They have to watch out for that. They're going to try to stop Neller today. That's their key to stop the three-point shooting team. And UMBC is going to try to just play the spoiler today. You know, they're going to probably be the seventh seed in the tournament. They pretty much know that already. So, you know, nothing for them to for pressure. Stony Brook, they just got to keep it going. That's a lot of, when you're the top dog, you know, you just got to try to keep it going. Will there be a letdown today? Probably, because it's not Vermont. There won't be as big of a crowd here tonight. It's raining hard, so a lot of people probably just said, forget it. You know, that's just the way it is. And so Stony Brook just has to go to the task at hand in playing basketball tonight.
Well, as Jeff said, the Seawolves, they have that two-game lead now over Vermont and Boston University in the loss column heading into this home stretch with just the four games remaining. The Seawolves, they're putting together their 16-game home conference winning streak on the line tonight. This is the 23rd meeting all-time between the two teams, and the Seawolves lead that 14-8. They've won nine straight matchups and are 7-2 against UMBC at home. A win tonight would clinch Stony Brook's third 20-win season in its last 4 years, by the way. A tremendous accomplishment.
Interesting to see two for UMBC. They have an interim coach that's there. You'll see if that team is playing hard. They want that coach back next year. He's going to try to get that job. If they don't, I mean, obviously, either way, they're going to be UMBC is going to do a full-blown search for a coach next year. But if they're going to make a pitch for their interim coach that's there right now, you know, Mr. Thomas, he's going to have, you know, you could see that this team is going to really play hard for him.
And, of course, Jeff referring to Aki Thomas, who has served the past 5 seasons on the Retriever basketball staff, was named acting head coach for the 2012-2013 campaign back in October. He had previously been an assistant coach at Howard University, his alma mater, from 04 to 07. Well, the Seawolves, their guy's been in place for 8 years, and what a job he's done, what a run it's been for the last 5 or so. And Jeff, as usual, had an opportunity to talk to Steve Pikel.
Had an opportunity to speak to Coach Pikel, too. And the one thing that we talked about also, a win tonight gets you to that 20-win plateau. And, you know, forget NCAA and all that stuff. 20 wins is also a mark of a successful team.
Moments before tonight's game between Stony Brook and UMBC, we're talking to head men's basketball coach Steve Pikel. And, Coach, some brief summary over the win over Vermont.
Great, great day in Seawolf country. Played well, high energy, great defense against a good basketball team. So it was a good win. I've tried very hard to put that behind us now, moving into the UMBC game, which is a critical game for us. A, it's a home game here in Pritchard, and we only have 2 more left on the board. And B, they're a very good offensive basketball team. So had to get our guys' attention quickly to get back on track here. All your hard effort for the Vermont game could be for naught if you don't take care of business here tonight against UMBC. So looking for a great effort by our guys, and hopefully we can maintain this great home court advantage.
You know, regarding Vermont, it was good to get the win, obviously, because they beat us here in the championship game, and then, you know, they wanted Patrick, so it was good to get a victory over a good Vermont team.
Yeah, I mean, great, and we've been real good at home in Pritchard with them. I think we have 4 games in a row now that we've won at home. You know, in Pritchard. So pleased with that. They're a good basketball team. So anytime you could beat them, they're at the top of the league always. It's great for everybody. But again, we got 25% of our, you know, season still left. We have 2 of the toughest road trips, you know, on the board, and play a very good Albany team. So, you know, we have to really, really focus on tonight's game and take care of business before we go down the road and head up to Maine.
Speaking of UMBC, some things that we've noticed over the years is, you know, you can't take anybody lightly. Top teams could beat the bottom teams could beat the top teams. So UMBC, you know, looking to get that win today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jeff, as always, every game we play is a huge game. You know, everyone plays their best basketball against us. We're the number one team in the league, and they're going to play great here tonight without a doubt. So we are going to have to continue to play good basketball. And, you know, we have to do that for the next 4 conference games and then go to a neutral site and do the same thing. So we got a tough stretch here ahead of us, and we need to be really focused.
Give us some attributes about UMBC.
Well, I tell you, they got 3 of the top 10 scorers in the conference, so that tells you enough about them. They can really score. Neller's shooting the ball as well as anybody in the league. He's averaging 4 threes a game for the last 5 games, which is a huge number. Plummer in the paint is one of the best post players in the conference, poses a lot of problems for us. And then Ryan Cook has been a double-double guy, basically the best rebounding guard in the league. Scores points, shoots the 3-ball. So they got 3 real good players, and then they got a host of complimentary guys around those guys. So dangerous basketball team with good wins already in the season, and we're going to have to play our best defense tonight.
What are some of the things that you'll be looking out for Stony Brook to do well today?
Well, I mean, we really got nothing for Neller. We really got to do a great job. Number 15, we've been talking about him for 3 days now. You know, he's the key. He can really shoot the basketball from deep. He spaces him out. And then we got to do a great job on the backboards. Very good offensive rebounding team. And we got to run. So we got to get up and down the court, and we got to make this a little bit of a track meet here moving forward. So important game, important for, you know, our guys to be real focused. And again, it's going to take, you know, 11 guys will check into the game today, and they got to be ready to play.
On a side note, I noticed that the league sort of rewarded you, gave you another ESPN game against Albany in the last game here at Pritchard.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you get on ESPN, Jeff, you know how that is. It's great. It's great for the program. It's great for our community. It's great for our students. Obviously, great for our players. So, you know, pleased with that. But, you know, just trying to beat UMBC right now, and we'll focus on that, and then we'll worry about Albany down the road. But great to get an ESPN game.
Coach, best of luck.
Thank you.
And Steve Peichel there talking about UMBC. As he mentioned, this is a UMBC team. Caused him a lot of concern. And you look at that stretch run for the Seawolves. It begins tonight. And it doesn't get any easier at Maine, at Boston University, and then finally senior night hosting Albany here. So very, very tough. Arguably the toughest stretch run of any America East team. But this is a very dangerous UMBC team. One that beat, you know, their highlighted wins. They beat Towson earlier on in the season, 66-62. The Towson teams have pulled off some upset wins of its own and doing very, very well. They've also managed to beat in the conference Maine and Hartford, two of the upper echelon teams. And then, of course, they've also beaten New Hampshire, who is always, always tough to go down.
This is one of those type of games, Kurt. You know, Steve Peichel, Jay Young, Dan Ricard, Lamar Chapman could do all the preparation that they want. Unfortunately, they're not getting on the court tonight, you know, and that frustrates coaches sometimes when they're not getting on the court because they're ready to go. The coaches are ready to go. They're well prepared. If the Seawolves come out of the locker room and do what they have to do, it should be an easy one tonight. But if they don't and they're not motivated and they're thinking down the road and like you said, still in the glory of the Vermont win, then there could be trouble here tonight. So those are the things you have to think about. You know, coaches only coach the game. The players, they play. They're the ones that put out the final product.
Stony Brook, with its run, continues to add and continues to go with the program's best 25 games in its Division I history. It's the best start ever. And should they win, that run would continue. Jeff also noted it would mark the Seawolves' third 20-win season in the past 4 years. And they're trying to extend a pretty good conference run. Home conference winning streak, 17 games dating back to February of 2011. And that, Jeff, is outstanding.
Yeah, they're 87th right now in the RPI. They are 24th in the mid-major poll. They're one of, 10 or 11, 12 mid-majors right now of teams to watch, you know. But one thing that, you know, Stony Brook has is that they have to win the America East. There's no at-large situation in the America East, unfortunately. So, got to get to the America East, win that championship, and, you know, go from there. But tonight, it's UMBC, take care of business. It's like going to work. You just got to take care of Tuesday or Wednesday. You got to go through every day of the job. Today is the day. You just can't think of Vermont. You can't think of Maine. You can't think of Albany. Just take care of UMBC today and then worry about, you know, going to classes tomorrow. Just one thing at a time.
Well, one thing at a time has added up, and Tommy Brenton is 5 assists away from becoming Stony Brook's all-time Division I career leader. Remember, this is a guy who's already the career leader, period, in rebounds. My condolences, Eve Simon. but now stands to, and 5 is a very reachable number tonight for Tommy, Jeff, given the way he plays.
And you know how old we are. We've seen every rebound between Eves and Tommy.
Just about. So, there have been a few missed ones here and there. But
pretty close, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty close.
Stony Brook is also, you know, they've got Jameel Warney. This guy is a runaway pick for Rookie of the Year. How outstanding has he been? Well, he is 18 for his last 21 from the field, and that's good for an 8.57 field goal percentage. That's not too shabby, Jeff. I don't know if we've ever seen that.
No. He's by far one of the best rookies in the America East, as is the guard from BU, Watson. Those two are far and away the best big man and the best guard. They are the future of the the big man for Stony Brook. Warney is the future for the for the America East. Watson probably the future for the Patriot League.
Well, by the way, as you mentioned, Maurice Watson this week, along with Jordan Reed, he is co-rookie of the week, and he earned that for the fourth time, including the third time in 4 weeks, by averaging 13.5 points, 8 rebounds. That's for a guy who's sub 6 foot. He's about 5'10", and 4.5 assists in a pair of wins last week. He recorded his first career double-double in a win over New Hampshire on Sunday, and that was Boston University's fourth straight victory. So Joe Jones very happy to have Maurice Watson come up from the Philly area. Let's send it down now to the public address announcer for our national anthem. Well, the largest ovation for the national anthem belongs to the most diminutive performance. They may be short in stature, but big on talent and heart. Great rendition of our anthem.
And now if Stony Brook can pull down the energy like those kids did tonight, should be an easy win for the Seawolves.
Absolutely. Well, let's get the starting lineups to you, and we'll begin with the visitors. I'll try to keep pace with our public address announcer. In the backcourt, they will start a trio of guards. Steve Pikel highlighted a couple of them. It'll be Ryan Cook, a senior guard, 6'2", from Laurel, Maryland. He'll join Brian Neller, 6'4", senior from Red Bank, New Jersey, along with Quentin Jones, a 6-foot senior from Ellicott City, Maryland. Up front, it will be Adrian Satchel, the 6'5", senior from Windsor, Connecticut, and Chase Plummer, so talented, 6'6", junior, normally a forward, but with the injury to Brett Roseboro, pressed into action at the 5. He's a 6'6", junior from Plainfield, New Jersey. For the Seawolves, it'll be the usual suspects. Redux. Scott King, of course, in the starting lineup, replacing Eric McAllister, who will play about the same amount of minutes coming off the bench. Then it'll be Tommy Brenton flanking Jameel Warney. And then in the backcourt, the steady backcourt of Anthony Jackson and David Coley. Now, without further ado, turn it over to my buddy, your broadcast partner. Let him do all the heavy lifting, Mike Solana.
Michael, good to see you. The boat made it.
Yeah, there we go. Just pulled in the nick of time. Unbelievable out there tonight. Hope everybody is driving safe. Bit of a slow go, but we are here and a full house that has made it to Pritchard Gymnasium for tonight's basketball game between the Seawolves and UMBC, the second of two meetings between these two teams. And Kurt Hirsch on the way in talking about what a difficult stretch schedule this is for the Seawolves, and as they look to solidify their spot atop the America East standings, winning this game tonight an absolute imperative.
They got you, Mike, because I think that main trip is a very difficult one. You know, it's that 8-hour ride. It's a tough place to play. Maine has a heck of a lot of talent, arguably, in the top four talented teams in the league. You can split hairs on that. And they've been unpredictable. They've been mercurial. You never know which Maine team you're going to get. And then, of course, BU. I mean, again, they're a perennial hopeful. And Albany was a team chasing title dreams. So there's no doubt about it, the Seawolves have, just because of the way the schedule shook out, the toughest stretch run going down, and some pretty tough matchups for them. So, you know, everybody is gunning for them. Steve Pikel talks about being the rabbit, the hunted, all the time. And Jeff had mentioned that UMBC, what are they playing for? They're playing for wins like this. I mean, they certainly look back with a lot of pride, as they should, a win over Towson much earlier in the out-of-conference season. But, man, would they love to knock off the number one seed or the number one team at this moment and make things a little bit murkier heading into March.
That would bring to an end a two-year winning streak here in conference play on home court for the Seawolves. Have not lost here since February 2011 against America East competition. It'll be Scott King jumping things off against Chase Plummer, and Plummer wins it back for UMBC wearing the road black uniforms tonight. Gold, black, and gray trimmed down the sides. White numbers trimmed in gold and gold lettering with the names in the back of those jerseys. On the outside, Adrian Satchel finds Brian Neller. He puts up a three and connects, and a bad start for the Seawolves as Neller, who was held very much in check down in Baltimore in late January, strikes in the first 20 seconds. Here's Jackson to answer. He does! So maybe not so bad a start for the Seawolves. 3-3, half a minute in.
Well, let me give you some great scouting here. Brian Neller, that's what he does. Jackson, that's what he does, too.
And the scout for the Seawolves tonight is nothing for Neller. That's pretty much the theme.
And they do it to one another. Here's Cook driving in. He has it blocked from behind by Brenton, out of bounds on the baseline. That'll stay with UMBC going left to right in this opening half of play.
I really like Ryan Cook. You know, what a great story. He was a walk-on. Steve Michael mentioned, become a double-double guy. Really can get into the defense. Can shoot a little bit from the outside, too.
Quentin Jones tries his luck from three in the right corner. It comes up empty, a little too strong. Dave Coley, the rebound, runs the middle of the floor for the Seawolves. Back to King. Steps around Cook. Floats one down on the low post for Warney. Picks it up. Goes to the left hand and dumps it in. Great hands, Kurt, as always, from Warney. Not a great pass. He was able to gather it in and finish.
Biggest aspect of his game, the key to his game, is because he catches the ball so well, so effortlessly. And then now, the great body control. He was getting bumped down there. A much smaller unit on the floor for UMBC. They're going to have their hands full tonight.
There's a three ball from Satchel. That one misses from the left wing. So UMBC going all or nothing from downtown here in the opening minute and a half. Here's Coley straight on three-pointer. Missed it to the right. Jackson fighting for the offensive rebound against Jones. Kept it alive, but comes right into the hands of Chase Plummer. Ahead for Jones. Floats one up from inside the paint. Off the glass and good.
Well, UMBC, no doubt about it, is going to try the three ball a lot, but they've got to augment that with showing some shot fakes sometimes and then getting inside, and they were able to do it right there.
Tied at 5, 2 minutes into the game. Brenton High on the right side. Waits and hands off Anthony Jackson, who will dribble it between the circles. Around to the left wing for Coley. Sewell's going right to left, wearing the home whites. Red numbers trimmed in gray. Cross-court pass from Brenton out to Jackson. Left corner, three. Back rim, no good. Offensive rebound. Brenton has it stripped away on his way back up. Taken away by Neller. To the outside, Chase Plummer. Free throw line extended right side. Bounces it down. Baseline for Cook. Turnaround jumper good from 15.
Well, UMBC off to a good start so far. And, you know, on the defensive end, they're small, but they're quick. And they're going to really try and sag down, collapse on the post players, get those active hands going, and cause some deflections or some steals.
As you guys mentioned, gave the Seawolves all they could handle in Baltimore just a few short weeks ago. Here's Jackson, left corner, once again for the Seawolves. Drives baseline, kick out top of the arc to King. Takes it around to the elbow, long jumper, no good. Cook there for the rebound. 3 minutes played, 7-5, UMBC. As it's Cook once again, one-on-one. Lost the dribble, trying to go behind his back against Jackson. Jackson picks it up, down the floor, behind the back, pass by Coley to Warney to throw it down.
Well, cardinal rule of being a guard, when the big fella runs.
An alley-oop attempt to the other end there, Kurt, broken up by Brenton, but it'll be called for the foul.
I don't like that call, but I understand why it got called. As the lob came in, Tommy swiped it. He gave the reverse Tyson Chandler going towards the baseline, and so he contacted the offensive player. I think it's a free ball, so it shouldn't be a foul. And Ryan Cook makes him pay.
Right off the inbound, goes around the screen and then sinks a long jumper with Brenton getting right out on him. So 9-7 UMBC.
UMBC, you're trying to solidify. You got a shot at that sixth seed as well here tonight. So they want to stay out of the cellar.
There's Brenton over to Coley on the left side. Coley to the free throw line for Warney. Back outside King. NBA range three. Back iron no good. And Satchel has position on Brenton for the rebound. Alice to Jones near sideline.
Nice point there, Mike. Really did well blocking out Brenton.
Here's Cook. He'll try a three off the outlet pass. No good off the back rim. Offensive rebound, though, came right to Quentin Jones off a deflection by Warney, and Jones was there for a layup to put UMBC up four.
Well, it was 3-2 there. Brenton and Warney were back rebounding, but inside there were three UMBC retrievers.
And Brenton takes it upon himself, driving in, and he draws the foul on the right side of the lane. On Satchel, his first, team's first, and that brings us to a timeout on the floor. 15:44 remaining in the first half. UMBC 11, Seawolves 7 on your longtime home for Seawolves Sports, WUSB.
Hi, this is Jim Fiore, Director of Athletics at Stony Brook University, and you're listening to Seawolves Sports on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook.
All right, gentlemen, rather quiet on the America East schedule tonight. However, we do have some other local NCAA men's action. Number 17 Marquette is in Newark, New Jersey to face Seton Hall tonight. And early in that game, the Pirates are leading Marquette by a score of 5-3. Also just getting underway, Fairfield hosting Iona in Bridgeport. And Ulster Community College visiting Suffolk Community College in Brentwood. Earlier today, girls high school basketball playoffs on Long Island. Harborfields tops Islip 68-48 in the Suffolk Class A semifinals. And in boys action in the Suffolk Class A semifinals, it was Amityville 70, Bayport Blue Point 43. Seawolves trail by 4. Let's send it back now to Mike, Kurt, and Jeff.
WUSB Studios. Sports 15:44 remaining in the first half. UMBC with an early 4-point lead on the Seawolves. Jamil Warney with 4 for Stony Brook, with 4 apiece for Quentin Jones and Ryan Cook. And some early 3-point prowess from UMBC. Made their first one from Brian Eller, and now will be getting some good looks inside. Took their first three of their first 4 attempts or so are from long distance. Now starting to get some penetration and some offensive rebounds already, 2 of those.
You play against UMBC, you have to have perimeter defense. They're going to, UMBC, as Kurt mentioned, is just going to just throw that ball up from the Long Island Sound, and that's what they do.
Inbound here with the Seawolves in command, down at the left end of the floor. Anthony Jackson, top of the arc, dribbles around left side as Lenny Hayes fresh into the game for the Seawolves. Jackson on the far baseline, gets it back up top to Coley, and around it goes right to left from Hayes to Brenton. Back outside, Hayes on the right wing. Takes Cook with him, over to Coley, 12 seconds on the shot clock. It's back to Jackson, backs it up near midcourt. Now gets a high screen from Brenton, steps up, puts up the 3, goes down, no whistles. Jackson was going back on the shot. We get a foul and a whistle on the rebound going against the Seawolves.
Well, you know, the one thing, that conference winning streak, 17 games,